Welcome to Not Work Storytelling. This is the show where we untangle our myths and reweave our stories, one age-old tale at a time. I'm your host and lead storyteller, Marisa Gowdy. I'm a myth worker, a story healer, a coach for writers and creative entrepreneurs, and the author of The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic. If you love what you hear and want to support the show, I'd be so grateful if you'd become a paid subscriber on Substack. In my newsletter, Myth is Medicine, you'll receive bonus content related to the stories on the show and deep dives into how mythology and folklore can help heal the individual and the collective in the present moment and beyond. There's a link in the show notes to follow Myth is Medicine on Substack, or visit mythismedicine.substack.com. Season 5, Episode 4, Bardic Return, Poems by Aisling Fraser. Before we dive into today's episode, which includes a series of poems inspired by the land, myth, and ancestors of Ireland, I wanted to let you know about what's going on in my world and how we might work and write together as we enter into the bright half of the year. Right now, I'm accepting a couple of new writing coaching clients. Whether it's a book project that wants to be birthed, deep, authentic writing to support your business, or a personal creative project you can't quite name yet, I'm here to support your progress and help you get words on the page and into the world. And on Lunasa, on August 1st, we'll be welcoming new members to the Writer's Knot community. This writing group meets weekly, and I'm adding an additional cohort this fall to welcome in more folks from around the world. This long-running, global, online community is where creatives with a passion for myth, archetype, nature, and the biggest questions about being alive in this moment come together to develop and share their ideas. Find out more about both my individual and group offerings at marisagowdy.com. And now, our guest. Aisling Fraser is the founder of Danu Wellness, a healing space designed to reconnect you with the truest version of yourself. She is a mother, a therapist, an imbus poet who works as a medium for an ancient Celtic healing process which is deeply rooted in the heritage and history of Ireland. This is a process of mystic invocation and sacred prayer that stems from the Tuatha Dé Danann and has been used in her country for over 6,000 years. Aisling also creates gatherings both indoors and in the wild to help us remember our connection to the cyclical calendar, combining the energy transmissions, poetry, sacred music, and all of our seasonal abundance in nature. Well, I am so grateful to welcome Aisling to Not Work Storytelling today. I've had the great pleasure of meeting Aisling as a writer. She's a member of our Writers Knot community. And she is a poet who speaks to the soul. I can tell you that when she reads her work to our group, everyone just is leaning in, that we're gathering around the world on Zoom. And I have a sense that you'll lean in as you hear her words roll out to you today. So Aisling, as a poet, is going to offer us something a little different today, in that instead of taking us into one particular mythological story, Aisling is going to offer us a series of poems, and we're going to interleave those poems with some conversation about their resonance and about the ways in which they ripple in and through us. So Aisling, will you give us a poem?
Yes, I would love to. So the first poem that I'm going to read is called Imbas Forasni. And that's a really ancient practice that we have in Ireland. If you want, in a minute, I can explain a little bit about what I understand it to be. Chanting, speaking, raving, ranting. Mad, they called her as she exited the caves of Kesh. Speaking of the future, speaking of the past. Speaking of the times gone by like she had lived them day after day, again and again and again. She narrated the perspectives of all of the losses and all of the gains of the land's speckled past. Walking into the light, She guided them with her spells and incantations. They listened. Some feared. Some wandered from her gaze into their own fantasies of reciting the work of the ancient pathfinders. But still they received. Words, when spoken, cannot be rearranged in any other way, only the way that the chants allow them to be spoken. Narrative begins to change as the words penetrate the sweet morning dew. The dew nods her head in great gratitude of the assistance that is being afforded to walk alongside the humans as they open the doors to the other world. Chanting, chanting, they awaken all of the earth's songlines together in an epileptic spin of words, 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 bashing, crashing through the thick forest of darkness that surrounds the light. The words escape and filter through all of the deep layers of pain. They guide us. They call us to attention of what is in existence in this land. And they steer at the helm. Those ever-changing words as they move through the atmosphere. Oh, the wise ones that speak through these activating, humble expressions of twisting and turning incantations. Oh, the wise ones that begin to offer us their ever-reaching hands from across the veil. They come. They come. They come and hold us in a tight embrace of fallacies beginning to fall away as we receive the words. Through our eyes, our ears, our feet, our hands, and our entire skins that we wear. All those words circling around in an erotic dance, opening us, preparing us, keeping us safe with their light that they shine into our world.
Thank you for that. It's such the perfect introduction to your work, because if I had to wrap up what I know of you and how you offer this beauty and this verse, it would be this poem.
Yeah, I guess it does. Yeah, because it's all about the words. Mm-hmm. For me, it's not about me writing the words as mm-hmm. such. I'm the scribe, I'm the writer of the words. But the words leap forth from somewhere really potent, really old, and really deep into existence. And the words, they have work, they have place, they have meaning in this time. And yeah, I mean, I guess it just feels like it's my place to share them or begin to share them more.
So I was reading your work before we got together today. I couldn't help but think of two other Irish writers who have taken such a powerful position in the last century. I could hear Yeats saying, "Words alone are certain good." And I could hear Seamus Heaney saying, "If you have the words, there's always a chance you'll find the way." And I could hear those two sort of just whispering in terms of like, yes, this is that same tradition, because it's the Irish bardic tradition, right? I mean, as much as I know that what you're expressing is beyond language and yet is so immensely associated with the power of words themselves. It's such a sacred sort of paradox.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess this has always been our way to communicate with the land, you know, because we are people of the land. I guess we're all people of the land. It's not just Ireland. It just happens to be that this land is the land that I'm in, and it speaks through me, through my DNA, through my body, through my bones. But absolutely, like, words are what have always carried us through time. And in the past, I guess words have been less for entertainment value and more for life or death, you know, with our ancient tribes. Our words are what brought us our safety through the seasonal cycles within the tribes. If you go back and back and back, as far as I am aware, you know, the space would be opened to connect with the divine. For example, maybe the Altana, when the old stone circles, then the tribe would gather and everybody would be equal together. There would be no person who was higher than another. And then I think the dandelion would have been eaten, the Keshavan, to connect to the higher realms at that particular time. And then nobody else could speak except the person who was bringing through the words, because those words were seen as coming through from the other world. And they ensured the safety of the tribe going forward. And if somebody did speak, in fact, their head would have been chopped off. So that was how important the words were when these spaces were created to connect to something greater, whatever that may be.
So you've just given us such a powerful understanding of spell work. You know, we think about that sense of having the magic words, but you're giving us the really ancient roots of that. That was not a mere bibbidi bobbidi boo, I've got a wand and I'm going to say some words of power. These were the words of power that were connected to the land and the cosmos and the community so intricately.
Yeah, and those words were important for each and every person, not for one more than others. There was no power. It was based upon community and connection and gatherings. And I guess that's something that really speaks to me now, is that need to connect at a time of such disconnection. Many of us are feeling that need to connect through something pure, something that's not based upon ego, but based upon love, and words that are based upon the entire community's needs, not just us alone, but all of us on that ship together, each one of us having that essential role.
So I know something of you, and the sources of your poetry comes much less from reading mythology or histories. And instead, it's very much your own felt sense of the land and of the ancestors. So I'm so aware of that as I ask you this next question, which is that as you're talking about the power of community, and I hear that and I feel that in my bones, I think lots of listeners of this podcast would also say, wait, but what about sovereignty? And what about the powers of kings and queens in Ireland? And I know, having read so much of your work, there's the power of the queen comes in there too. So I'm wondering if there's anything you want to say about that, or even maybe a poem you want to read, that I feel like there's a wider story you're telling here that speaks across time, perhaps.
Yeah. What about sovereignty? What are we? How sovereign can we be if we're on our own boat? It feels that sovereignty is something that's based, again, for me, on connection. And connection can only be established through connection with absolutely everything, the tree, flower, the rock, the neighbor down the road. And I guess in our quest for sovereignty, where have we found ourselves? Everything in its sovereignty works within community. The tree, the flower, the mycelium that supports the growth, the death, and the rebirth, and all of the cycles. Isn't that all part of the one organism? Like, to me, it feels like it is. For me, contentment is found if I see everything, or if I can try and see everything, like the flower, the leaves, the growth, the death. That helps me to feel freedom, real freedom, because I know that I am part of something really, really beautiful. And that I am not working alone, but together with all of this community. the plants being part of my community, the animals being part of my community.
In that spirit, is there another poem that wants to come through right now?
Okay, let's see. Beckoning from beyond the film of acrimonious harm, the lion waits with open gates into our ancient farm of animalistic beginnings. I travel to another plane beyond the winds of time. Old Ireland, I bid you awake. It's an unending, masterful act that I am playing in my dreams. Oh, Satanta and your brothers, setting foot upon this wild enrapture, I open the gates for your wild arrogance to filter through. We are no warriors of pain. We are the champions of a time that sinners wept and falcons swept, and all the wonders of the world were teeming with connection. We are the stars that shine. We are the magicians of the light that penetrates our skin. Ra, I call your vision to spring from the sacred waters of my land. Ra, I call your visitation to my fists to soften their punch as I heave through the forest of inglorious attempts upon my land to harshen its awakened soul. Ireland, you are not a crusader for the many fates that stepped upon your soil. You were the open-hearted victor that held scars of each one of the passers-by and waited until it was time to claim your queen once again. Ireland, amongst the trees and saplings, you were awakened by the voices that so strongly speak within your soul. You are ready to regain your queenship and rule this land once again. With your farming techniques so soft upon the hands of those who touch your delicate mycelium, you are unbridled with the ancient prowess of an Egyptian priestess, awakening softly in a world so full of glory and fight. Lay down your modern masks and swords of busy fumbling existence. Ireland is calling you, you fools, to stop. See and know how you truly are and how you can live in a new design decorated by ancient prayers and mystical dreams. Ireland is the language that bubbles in your ancient soul through the forests you have cleared to open soggy, boggy wetlands of modern makings and your own takings. Take her heart no more, but instead, step into her lush forests and feel her everywhere, calling you from the abyss of modern existence. Ireland, she whispers, is the very magnitude of belonging that speaks to your own ancient soul. I am in your every step that you make upon your life. I will stand strong and hold you as you unpeel the years of angst that has set your soul aspin with confusion. I bring you, who you are, to your conscious mind. I bring your sense of kinship. I welcome you to the narrative of the world's enchantment, which circles around your skin, waiting for an opening to wind itself into your bitter wounds and soothe them. Forget your wanderings and meet me at the gate, and I will hold the very hand that smote your brethren. I will walk beside you as you enter your ancient forest of lush plains and new beginnings in a place you never left. Let me be your rock, your sun, your moon, and the earth you walk upon. I am Ireland. And I have come to take you by the hand and to guide you home. And to guide you home.
So much here. And as a daughter of the diaspora myself, there's just the, I would love to just begin at this sense of, you know, we know Ireland in its sense of fulcha, its sense of welcome. And that's certainly been
I think it's in the ethos of the people and the land itself and the tourist board and what it's supposed to offer visitors. But you offer us a deeply visceral, spiritual rephrasing of that idea into a calling that isn't just, hey, come along and visit and see the old sod, but instead is really a call back to a deeper, deeper soul. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. It's almost like, for me, the soul of the land speaks through the words. Mm-hmm. And actually, it brings me back to what you said about sovereignty.
Yeah.
I guess for me, it feels like a true expression of sovereignty is when I am not everything that I think I am, but I'm everything that's left behind, which is me in full connection to my land. And when I can say my land, not mine personally, but, you know, we are of the entire land. So, yeah, that's what it feels like to me. But that's what sovereignty is. I'm fully free when I've let go of all of my stories. And it feels for me as that happens to me, it moves me closer to everything else.
And there's such magic and such an invitation in that, and also such fear, right? We know we human beings, we lovely, fragile, egoic beings cling to story, not just because they're part of entertainment, but they're also part of cultural identity and personal identity. And we know, of course, we're on a storytelling podcast where the paradox of what story is always needs to be part of the question, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But I guess the story keeps changing, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
For what we need. The story keeps changing. It never stays the same. And sometimes we need to cut chapters out, or sometimes we need to leave chapters behind, or sometimes those chapters don't really fit into the new story as it begins to evolve. Mm. And I guess, yeah, it feels like that's also what the land is trying to do, right, is to release as us. We're all here. We all want to heal. You know, we're all on this huge healing journey, you know, and how can I clear, cleanse, and make myself freer? But we are in connection to the land. So that also is doing the same. You know, it's like she is also wanting to lift her stories right up so that they're not held within that soil and that mycelium, binding us to them. So one affects the other, doesn't it? One affects the other. Yeah, it's like a circle. Everything is like a spiral. It's like a great spiral moving around and around, just bringing us to different places all of the time.
That brings to mind the way, and I think you invoke the forests, Ireland amongst the trees and saplings. It was an absolute mind-blowing revelation to me when I first heard Ireland described as a desert, because it was never intended to be these great green fields full of sheep. And intended is a difficult word, but the Ireland we go to visit and see today and can root into and be a part of was a hugely forested space. I mean, it was a rainforest. And now we look to it to be, you know, these great open expanses. So everything you're talking about, the changes and the ending of one chapter and the beginning of a new one, is contained in the stories you're referencing in the poem, but in the landscape itself.
Yeah, and we can't go back, nor would we want to, because a lot of things I'm sure we wanted along the way, but we can only move forward.
Right.
And it's moving forward with this togetherness. Like, there's so much about farming that is so important for our existence. But I guess it's just that tiny little relationships with the way we behave with the land that are open for change, are open for remembrance. You know, even, I guess, the way we treat our gardens and our grasses and what we cut and what we keep. And, you know, when you begin to see a plant, you can't unsee that plant. And when you begin to see its cycles, and so it's about reestablishing and actually seeing where we're living And I think that comes back to speed as well, and the speed that we forced to live at, or that we do live at, because when we move quickly, like, we don't see anything. And when you don't see anything, you don't really give it a second thought. But when you begin to move slower, you notice that, oh my God, here comes the Alexander. Here comes the meadow sweet. Oh my God, it's time for primrose coming back again. I see her. Oh, there's the hawthorn just coming into flower. And when we begin to see that again, that changes our entire relationship with everything. And I think that is something that totally we can apply across the board, from like the tiniest little patches that we have to the great big fields, you know, that are farmed of 100 acres. And it's really just seeing what is out there and going slow enough to feel into it and asking what she needs, as opposed to placing our own needs upon it and saying, well, I think that area needs that there. Staying long enough to find out what the earth needs and listening to her because she has a voice.
Well, what you're bringing to mind is Mary Reynolds' work and her work with the Ark. You know of Mary Reynolds?
Yeah. Wild Mary. Yeah. She, for me, made me completely begin to think about my garden in a different way. Mm-hmm. You know, not totally, but like now I'm like, oh, great, it's wild. Whereas before I was like, oh no, this is so embarrassing. You know, yes. My family are going to come out again and I still haven't cut my grass and I still haven't weeded it. Now right. I'm like, Antine, you've got to stay. I'm going to make an oil out of you. You've got, you know, you're anti-inflammatory. There's a reason why you're there. You know, I'm like, I'll let that grow a little bit longer before I cut it. And then you begin to have a conscience, don't you, with everything that's there, because there are plantcestors, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know,
there's wisdom in the plants. There's wisdom in nature.
Mm.
Yeah, that really, really wants to present itself to us if we will stay long enough, if we will only stay long enough.
And you know, this connects right back to your thinking about sovereignty in terms of the fact that we're not in the boat alone. It's not just one solitary pious priest in a curragh. You know, it's an entire ark full of the bees and the rabbits and the plantains and the dandelions, and just that the wild diversity that I feel like you're always invoking with all of your words and all of your work.
Yeah, maybe not always with my actions as much as I would want to, but definitely with the words. And as you say it, what comes to mind is like the Viking boat. Like, how did the Vikings get so far? Because they worked together, you know, they all rowed their boat. They all steered together to be able to get somewhere. Like, we went on a boat on the Shannon, myself and my kids and my husband last week. And we would have been like in a ditch if it wasn't for like all of us. We needed the kids at times to like park us up because we were floating all over the place because we didn't know how to ride a boat. But yeah, like we were all needed, in our own roles, fulfilling our own roles, not somebody else's roles, our own roles. And when we have our own roles and when we are doing our thing, then we're going to get like amazing places, aren't we?
Yes. And you write really eloquently about the Vikings and about Norse belief. So maybe we'll touch on one of those poems next. But I want to just call in before we move on from Ireland calls. And I'm going to try to find the line. So give me half a second here. Lay down your modern masks and swords of busy, fumbling existence. Ireland is calling you, you fools, to stop, see, and know who you truly are and how you can live in a new design decorated by ancient prayers and mystical dreams. And to me, that just invoked Ireland in the last 6 months, particularly in the power in which the Irish people have spoken for the people of Palestine. And that just, I'm not sure how much that was a conscious idea that came through for you at that moment, but it was so vivid on the page for me in terms of how Ireland's been held as a clarion call and a voice well before the people of America could start to really speak up.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's the same thing about coming together in community and about slowing down to take the time to think about others.
Yeah.
To think about each other.
Mm.
Yeah.
So So what poem is tugging at your sleeves next?
Blackwater Awakening. Trickle from the belly of the marginal path, meandering down through the mountain's circumference and landing in the open waters of the divine harbor that opens its mouth to the vast oceanic views. Your strong waterfalls are what propose your destiny, so that the deep waters are filling you until you rise up through the cities that have been plundered once again. You feel it all, each scream of the child's last breath as they are sent to Valhalla's great hall. Trickling no more, their tears are sent down your body to the next place of destiny's choice. And wilting in the summer sun are your daisies around your meandering body. Throwing in some ashes, the old woman heats her cottage with a simple fire of wood so that she can cut with her axe and furrow, so that her frailty will subside with the heat that penetrates her through the fire's existence in her life. Where would she be? Only alone. The fire was her only companion. Heading southwards, advancing through the city's gates, the heathens came and marauded through the dingy streets, carrying their weapons made in a faraway land. Terror was in the air, as people scattered everywhere through narrow pathways and holes in fences, waiting patiently for the moment that they were hidden no more from the marauders' watchful eyes. Vikings, they called them in years to follow. But at the time of the invasions, the name we used was Varadhana, which was not a name of honor and glory, but a description of how these kings took their fair share of our lives' makings, stripping them bare so that they were left to die. You saw all of this, sweet Blackwater Belt, as you meandered your way to freedom. You carried them upon your waters as they cheered a bloody cheer and passed all the petrified countrymen awaiting their next return. You never uttered a word to us of their arrival, but instead watched, waited for no one, and carried them home alongside your own floating masses that never made it back to the soil. How did you not cave in with the weight of this carriage that was flung into your body? How did you manage to keep your momentum and take them all? It may be the very undoing of your silence and peaceful disposition. Blackwater's belly, can we clean your intestines now of all the ways you were called into a crime without your consent? Can we wash you clean of the many attempts to darken your essence with sultry marauders' heavy hands as they washed them in your mossy banks and walked a walk of victory to the king's army that attempted to pursue these beasts? I call your waters back from the unwanted places that you visited and hold you up the light to incarnate your presence once again back to our aid. We need your clear waters to assist in our awakening of all that we are. Please return to the masterful wisdom keeper that you have been for us, and help us to reinvent your story once again, forever evolving into the full awakening of our guided spiritual velocity.
So for listeners who don't know, Blackwater is a river that flows through County Cork and I think a couple of other nearby counties. And I have a sense that you were visiting that river and it just essentially had visions of what had happened there.
Yeah, I guess I really have a call to the Blackwater River for like a while now and its path. So it begins in Slieve Luachra and it's up near the Paps of Anu, which are the mountains that they say are like the breasts of Danu, the mother goddess of the Tuatha De Danann. And there's a very sacred place up there called Shrone, which is they say it's one of the oldest cities where our ancient ceremonies took place and where the Tuatha were. So yeah, I don't know why I have a huge calling to the Blackwater River, and so much so that I brought my children there. We found the source and the boys jumped over it, and my little girl did a little blessing on it, and I picked some water from it. And now I'm going to do some work there with a friend of mine because we were called back there again. But yeah, the poem just came, and it feels like it's important. It feels like our rivers are really important, and they hold also a lot of our stories of what has happened over time. And I guess water, sources of water, have always been really important to us here in Ireland as well, like our holy wells, that being an entrance into the other world or into the divine, places of prayer. They're places that we always frequented, the rivers and the wells. And we used the waters, you know, for blessings always over all of the times that we have had in Ireland, over all of the history under different names, you know, our wells under different names. But they were places where people left their prayers and people gathered in community as well. So that's another important thing to say, is that they have always been places where people gathered and communities settled. Mm. So they were strong places in the land. Always. And I guess when something is sick, it's like a person, when a person is sick, they go totally out of kilter and everything becomes a little bit cranky and a little bit out of play. And it feels really like nature is sick. I think we all know that.
Yeah.
Just trying to heal. And for me, these words came as healing words to help the river to heal from all of the stories that have been embedded in her riverbeds.
Right.
You know, just for example, here in my own town in Middleton, the Onakura River burst her banks and flooded there recently. Mm. So much so it flooded the whole town and all of the shops had to close down. They were flooded up to maybe 2 meters high.
Oh.
So it just, for me, was a really, really potent display of the sickness of the rivers and how it can impact us as we live. And when they begin to heal and when they begin to come back into balance, then that will assist everything else to come back into balance as well, including us and all of the surrounding lands. So, yeah.
Mm. And what's contained in this beautiful poem in honor of a river and in terms of offering her blessing and healing are the Vikings, are these marauders and invaders. And if we only could get everyone into your 100 pages of poetry and bring them all in, but there's such a important theme in your work around all who've come to Ireland's shores, invasion and empire, and the ways in which, and knowing you're such a steadfast voice for peace, and yet you're always so aware of all the conflict that has been wreaked upon the people and upon the earth again and again.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, it's nobody's fault.
Mm. Yeah.
As in, it's none of the people that live here now. It's nobody's fault. So it feels like there's a great deal in that all of these invasions have happened upon the land and they're there to be healed and helped. And all of the wounds, I guess, are alive in different shapes and forms in all of the people that live here. Many of us, I know for a fact, there has to be some part Viking in me. I know that because I'm like totally obsessed with Vikings. I actually love Vikings. And, you know, I felt like I had to go to Norway and get mocked over it all of the time. You know, are you trying to dress like Lagertha or something again? But, you know, it's like if something really speaks to you in life. Mm-hmm. It speaks to your soul. It's totally for a reason. So I know along the way somewhere, which is no surprise. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, along the history of Ireland, everybody became Ireland. Everybody that came, in each landing that came to the land, they all became part of the land, as did their stories. And I guess it's the stories that need lifting by all of us.
Yeah.
Because when it's lifted in the land, it's lifted within us. And when it's lifted in us, we become freer. And when we become freer, we become more joyous. And then we become more sovereign because we're free.
Yes. Yes. And I can't help but laugh because, of course, red hair most likely came from the Vikings too, right? Yeah. I mean, the signature Irish look. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So here I am probably needing to claim my Viking blood a little bit more than I ever have.
Totally. Yeah. You need to get that Thor's hammer out and you go up there as a shield maiden.
Yes.
You
know? Yes.
But yeah, absolutely. You know, all of that, it's, I mean, that feels to me like a really important path. And they even say, just again, going back to the Tuatha, that those islands that they came from of Boreas, Phineas and Ferdius, I think it is, that they came from first day, were from the north, from the Northlands, somewhere up around Scandinavia. And there's a huge link as you come down in all of the tradition and all of the cultures. And I feel like as I delve into the past more, I really can see all of the threads that exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So absolutely. And it feels like there's huge crossovers between the stories as well. You know, as in recently I was doing a course in rune reading from an amazing woman, Tammy Bergen, who lives over in Canada, who has huge Nordic tradition in her blood. And as we were talking about Freya, and all of her different traits and what she did and how she lived, all that was coming to my mind was the Morrigan, because Freya had cats in her chariot, you know, to kind of drive her chariot, and also did the Morrigan. And they had, you know, the big kind of bird wings. You know, there's so many crossovers in the tradition, so many.
Well, I feel like that's the perfect entree into your poem, Homeland, which is really talking about that crossover to Turtle Island, as you're referencing a Canadian woman teaching you of the runes, and really just, you know, and this is a gift you've given me as you find the poem. It feels important to say that in one of our first meetings, you shared this poem and it was just the touching. Well, wait, I want them to hear the poem first and then I'll preface it. But let's just say, if you'd read Homeland for us, that would be wonderful.
Homeland. That's where I roam land, free land, take me to thee land. You call my name in the dead of night, freedom is but a penny a pound. Millions fled, millions dead, millions with dreams of harmonic schemes, none of these met, bodies wet. Incarcerated souls bound to stories of success, pining for their homeland, remembering what was all of the hopeful glares of the ships that left this land, starvation imprinted upon the caskets that were hauled from port to port, filling each one of their decks with bodies, expectant of the freedom that their aching bodies would feel as they arrived in the land of promises and success. But these promises were short-lived, as they melted, limp and lifeless, into their carriage and failed to breathe a sigh of life again. Homeland. That's where I roam land. Tirelessly walking the plains like an everlasting nightmare bound to the seas that took my body from my dreams of escape. I am littering your coastlines. I am capturing the debris that you throw upon me, searching for the gold I was promised. Loss, oh, such loss that you have felt when you sail upon my frail bones that are deep within the seabed. Oh, such loss have you carried when you feel my presence. I call you to save me. I call you to raise up my tiny broken soul and take me back to my homeland. New York, New York, I never made it to your shores. Instead, here I lie with a pocket full of seashells growing over my frail little carcass. Please take me and make me a citizen of my own home once again. I miss the hills. I miss the caves. I miss the tribe that I had. I am lost at sea, emblazoned by power lines that can repair my tiny but heavy presence that makes my land sick. Homeland, I beg you to wrap me in my own ancestral song of freedom and lift me up higher than the coastal plains and marry my soul once again so that I can find my way back into my marital bed of ancient beginnings. Marry me, Ireland. Soothe my soul and bring me home. And I can promise you that as you raise me up, so shall my brothers rise that have been littering your seas for thousands of years. Wash the seas clean of lost souls of Ireland and all of the hopeful tales that never were. New York, you were never meant for my wild heart. The place I belong is on the hills of Donegal, and I will rest, and my soul will become free once again and fly over my homeland before I ascend to the higher plains. And with a bird's eye view, I shall blow a kiss to the land I loved so well. Freedom. Exultation. No more penumbra batterings by the sea's winter tides. Peace. Silence. The end.
I think that was one of the first poems I ever heard you share. And it felt like such a gift for those of us who live on the other side of the ocean. And these lost ancestors that we share. Because presumably, whether they were entire families or so often they were young people coming over on their own. And they never had a chance to become anyone's ancestor, perhaps lost onto your uncle. But their stories were lost and their lineage was lost to those of us who are Irish Canadians and Irish Americans. And those of us who are still left.
Yeah, I guess there was so much hardship. And it was really humorous that made me think about that in our group, the other side, people who left and what it was like and how they left, these real people and all of their stories, all of their individual stories, whether they made it or whether they stayed behind or whether they were lost at sea. But each one of them is a story. And again, I guess those stories are held in all of our bones and all of our shores and in the land. Everything that happened at that time of the Great Famine, all of those stories are held, and they quite possibly are a narrative that we are all living generations on now, because we are the carriers of the DNA of these people and these real stories. And again, it's like in the healing of those stories through the land and her connection to us and the healing of that within us, how can that change our reality now? How can that help us to become freer, lighter, more in flow? So it does feel like the sea is where we go to soothe our souls. And the sea also holds memory, just like us. So it's all interconnected, isn't it?
Yes. And especially now when we're so interconnected across the sea, right? And our layers of identity overlap, and yet there's such often strange and sometimes beautiful, but often just strange distinctions. I've never felt particularly at home in Irish America, but I felt as close to being home on the other side of the ocean as I could, even though I'm coming with such an American consciousness. It's a wound that gets carried by many of us in the diaspora who are yearning to do right by the land, to say, I know that we're here living on colonized lands that belonged, you know, in where I am in New York now, where I was in Massachusetts growing up. We're living on lands where the people were exterminated so many centuries ago, you could barely find a native person in these areas anymore. We have a few place names and scatterings of story. And there's so much yearning in portions of Turtle Island's Irish diaspora for this sense of saying, how can I both be in right relationship to the land I live on now and find my claim, for lack of a better word, that's not quite the right word, but that my connection to the ancestral lands and still hold those stories well while recognizing that I'm from away. Like, I explain it in ways that's probably unduly complicated, just to say, wow, it's identity is hard in the 21st century. Modernity does strange things to us. But I get tongue-tied with it because I realize it's such a central dilemma and mystery for me. It's why I've created this whole project.
Yeah. All that's coming to mind for me now is a really amazing song by John Spillane. And it's called Ireland and Australia. I don't know if you know it. And there's just one line in it that it says, who's superior, who's inferior, who's looking down to you? Who's looking down to who? The world is always turning. And then it goes on. So basically, he describes all of the stories of all of the countries and that all of them have been practically invaded by another. Yeah. And at one point, you're the invader and then you're the invaded. So the world is always turning. So I guess, as a whole, all we can try and do is hold space and compassion for all of it, because it isn't our fault. Whoever we are, the legacy of what our forefathers either did or were forced to do, oppressed or oppressor.
Yeah.
And all we can do is offer forgiveness, I guess. Where there is space for forgiveness and continue to explore the places where there's not and why it still exists. Why it's still alive within our bones. Why are we still holding on to this torch? What's it doing? How is it affecting the way we live and the way our community exists? What can we do to bring love to that and to shine a light to that so that we can just be, again, a little bit freer?
Yes. So I think we have time for one last piece. I'd love for you to read Bardic Return. And it feels like this might be a moment to sort of call back to our beginning. Just speak, if you would, just for a moment about Imbus Ferosny. And how really I feel like that is the glowing thread through so much of your work. And maybe you could give us a little bit about that and then read us your final poem.
Yeah. Okay. So Imbas, I feel it's the way that these poems have come to me. Like, you call me a poet. I wouldn't have called myself a poet. I never set out to write poems. I visited different places in my homeland. And as I visited all of the different places, I really feel like I received from the land. I feel like I was gifted these poems in different places. That might sound a little bit crazy to some people, but yet that was our ancient way. You know, everything was passed, not through books, but through deep connection. And orally also, we had a very oral tradition going back in time, that stories were passed from person to person and kept alive. And sometimes even, like, I think the Aboriginal song lines, you know, you'd wonder how all of the details were carried through. It's because all of these stories are held within the land, they're held within her body, and they're there to be reactivated, reawakened, and carried out throughout. And it doesn't feel like it is just me. It feels like this way is within all of us when we begin to step out of what we're not and into what we truly are. So for me, it's about bringing that voice back, that there is no poet or writer, that that is just a way of bringing words to life, and that all of us can access that, because words carry us through time and words carry us into better places. And the more words that circulate from the place of the heart and not just to entertain, I guess, feels like we're all there to help each other. So Imbas, for me, of what I know of it, was a very ancient practice where our seers, our Banfila, our prophetess, whatever it is you wanted to call them, would go into the very deep, dark caverns and caves. And they would go in there for 3, 6, or 9 days, a nomad or a nomad. And again, what we know of this is from the written kind of annals. I think it's from Cormac's glossary. There's one real account of it. So we don't know how accurate it is.
Right.
Everything is always written by the victor, so there's a twist on every tale. And that they would fast and they would have complete sensory deprivation, and the community would be outside, and then they would come out and they would have received, they would have gone to the other world and back. They would have left the body. They would have stepped outside, which isn't only an Irish tradition. As far as the bit of research that I've done, you know, in Egypt, Mesopotamia, you've got the Knights of Templar, you know, it can go on and on and on to many, many traditions. Mm. They came back holding on to words. And they would be the words that would bring support to the community, and the community would listen. And these Banfila were able to move from Tuha to Tuha because they were very well respected, because their words were so important, because it was life or death. I think there's the story of Fidelm in the Tombo Cúlainn, and Queen Maeve on her visitation to get the brown bull of Cúlainn was stopped by Fidelm, who was a seer. And she told her, don't go. Queen Maeve asked her, you know, is it a good idea for me to go and do this? And she said, no, there'll be like complete bloodshed. Don't do it. And she asked her four times. And Queen Maeve still persisted. And of course, there was a huge amount of her army lost in the great battle in Cúlainn. She did come back with her brown bull. But again, that was futile in the end, because both bulls ended up dying in the end. But the seer was a very important person within that. Very well respected. And that is also in the Nordic tradition. Mm. That there was the, I think they're called the Valva, that went around in groups of five or six. They were the seers, and they went from tribe to tribe doing the same, offering healing and offering words of healing. So yeah, so that's Imba. So it's not really writing with the head. It's just allowing the flow as such.
Beautiful. Oh, so well put. So with that, will you give us a bardic return?
Bardic return. Carried from the river to the oldest places on earth, the energy flows through the fields and begins to weave its way back into the bards again. Feeling her in the joints as they begin to tell the tales of the times when the Tuha was in the hills of the mounded society. The energy has spoken. And now they have awoken within the hills again. The carriage of a time whence they left us is bursting to come through the ethers to the wildest places that can speak freely of Ireland's true history once again. May the books fall to the pools of silence, and may the people who chant call back the original stories to guide us into a new age. Healing, healing as we go. To the places where we are called, bringing the magic in our fingertips, to the lost places that are carrying the old, unwanted tales of untruth and masking of what really was. Only the mouths of those who speak from the heart and soul can speak the life we led back into existence. O holy night of the divine shining ones, this is the beginning of your story. May we recalibrate the new earth with your divine stories from the places that you have come from, through the gates of the stone portals, to heal our civilization and rise with the masters once again.
Feel a call just to leave that there and to close and say thank you. Me and the Buikas for being with us.
Legro.
So before we close though and say farewell, Aisling, will you tell people a little bit about where they can find you and your words as they start to grow and expand into the world?
Yes. They can find me on danuwellnesscork.com. That's my website. And Instagram is probably the place that I'm most active, and I share everything there, even from my new Substack and YouTube. So on Instagram, it's Danu Wellness Cork as well. And that has all of the work that I do, including all of the healing gatherings and the outdoor events that I do as well.
Oh, Aisling, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for opening our hearts with your beautiful, beautiful words.
Thank you so much, Marissa. It was my pleasure. I'm delighted to have joined you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Not Work Storytelling Podcast. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of myth and story. By the way, everyone is a lover of myth and story, even if they've forgotten. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories through this season and beyond. Please consider becoming a subscriber to my paid newsletter, Myth is Medicine. You'll find it on Substack, and that's where all my newest writing and occasional bonus podcasts can be found. You can learn more about my writing, my book, our online creative community, The Writer's Knot, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach over at marisagowdy.com. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Munsee Lenape tribe, whose name means original people.